In the construction business and tired of dealing with the indifference of big corporate suppliers? Quality Supply and Tool on South Harding Street understands. For over 25 years, owner Kevin Anne has had a different approach.
We at Quality Supply and Tool take pride in being a locally owned family business committed to service. And every customer's needs are different, and we truly believe in shaping our business to our customers' needs. That's what separates us from the competition.
That's Quality Supply and Tool with additional locations in Bloomington, Jeffersonville, and Lafayette to serve Hoosiers better. Partner with Quality Supply and Tool and think outside the box store.
At the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it.
Beyond the Bricks with jQuery and Mike Thompson on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Hi there, how are you? Greetings and salutations. It is the week of the 108th running of the Indianapolis 500 mile race, or so we hope that Mother Nature allows that to be the case. As practiced today, a two-hour session. And it ran about what one would expect it to run in the fact that, A, most importantly, it was a clean practice session. There were no incidents, sparing if you wanted to be really nitpicky. Tom Blomqvist having an incident where he spun just a little bit on pit road. It was hairy for a split second, but no harm, no foul. Fastest of the day, Joseph Newgarden today, and running very well towards the front. One of the storylines that's going to be fun to watch, Colton Herta in his Honda for Andretti Global was very fast, second fastest of the day, but kind of the narrative, the talk around the paddock, if you will, has been that just because those Andretti Hondas were not fast in qualifying does not mean that they may not be fast in race setup. So we shall see what that means coming up in the greatest week in Indianapolis, because now you have officially Pacers and Racers, the Indiana Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. That opens up against the Boston Celtics in Beantown tomorrow. And then after Game 2, they come back to Indianapolis with a chance to sweep the Celtics, with Game 3 on Saturday, the Indianapolis 500 on Sunday, Game 4 on Monday. Yes, in fact, Indianapolis, the holiday season is here. Mike Thompson joins me each and every night when we do this program called Beyond the Bricks, which is a look back nostalgically at some of the Indianapolis 500 personalities, the names, the storylines, in the audio form, as Mike has the most expansive audio library known to man and joins us again tonight. Mike, how are you?
I'm okay. How's it going tonight?
You know, I'm starting to hit that point where I'm about like Alexander Rossi on lap 198 in 2016. But I can still find the additional fuel to get across the finish line, which is the important thing, right? Look, how can we complain? It is, you go on adrenaline at this point because between, and I want to make very certain that people understand, and I hope people do know my level of gratitude that we are able to do this. It is so much fun. I dreamed since the time I was a young kid of being able to do the Indianapolis 500 on the radio, and literally at no control of mine, strictly through luck, a lot of people helping me out in circumstance, life has fallen that way for me, so I wouldn't trade it for anything, and I am extremely grateful for it. But it's a lot. I mean, there are a lot of responsibilities. I love every minute of it, but you go on adrenaline. I'm fortunate to do all of it. I try to soak it all in, and I think, Mike, part of what gets you fatigued but at the same time rushing on adrenaline is you don't want to go through anything without stopping to observe everything going on around you because of the fact that we know we're blessed to be able to do it.
Oh, that's right. And you don't want to miss anything. You don't want to be, you know, I mean, there's so many different events. I know, like, you know, coming up tomorrow, that, you know, with the fastest rookie thing and all these different, there's so many different things. You want to be a part of it all, right? You don't want to be missing out on any of these things. So, no, I totally understand, you know, getting to that point where you're starting to run out of gas a little bit, but you just need Brian Herta in your ear to tell you to clutch and coast a few things and you'll be all right.
That's right. Clutch and chill, baby, two things that I'm not. But tomorrow you are correct. The chill will be of a cold glass of milk. The American Dairy Association of Indiana fastest rookie luncheon will be held tomorrow. All of the rookies will be there. I assume Kyle Larson will be in attendance.
The tradition is, and this tradition began, by the way, in 2016. Alexander Rossi, as a rookie, at the Fastest Rookie Luncheon, they had a dairy cow there, and Alexander Rossi asked if he could milk the cow. He did so, it was photographed, and he went on to win the race. So needless to say, every rookie has felt the need to do so since. But that is tomorrow. But I had mentioned last week, I was fortunate enough to work an event for PNC Bank in the chalets at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where I did a question and answer segment with none other than not one, not two, but three-time Indy 500 champion Dario Franchitti. And one of the stories that we talked about was Dario Franchitti on his 40th birthday in Indianapolis getting presented with the go-kart that he very first began his racing career in, and that was brought to the Speedway for his 40th birthday during the month of May. The reason it was topical is because it is the month of May now, and as a result of that, Mike, we are celebrating Dario Franchitti's birthday, correct?
That's correct. Tonight is birthday night on Beyond the Bricks. We have a little birthday. It's funny because Ray...
I like it.
Yeah, so yesterday, Rake asked me on the during the qualifying coverage, he said to me something, and I know you'll get a kick out of this. Just, I know you probably didn't get to hear it, Jake, but Rake says to me yesterday, he says, so what's coming up this week on Beyond the Bricks? And I said, Rake, Greg Rakestraw, for those who may not know that, that's Rake who we're referring to. Greg Rakestraw says this, to me, well, what's coming up this week on Beyond the Bricks? And I said, Rake, I have to explain a little bit and let you understand that we kind of wing it a little bit on Beyond the Bricks. We don't plan it out as far ahead as you might think we do. So it's kind of on a whim what I think, hey, you know what, that might be a fun topic tonight. And then I start throwing it together at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But I actually earlier today I was thinking about it. And I'm like, we have some significant birthdays that happened yesterday and today. So I thought, tonight will be a birthday show. So Rake, if you're listening, this show came together earlier today, so what I told you is correct. We do kind of wing it a little bit on this show.
Well, I love the topic. It's a good one. When is your birthday, Mike, if you don't mind me asking?
My birthday was 2 months ago today. My birthday is March 20th, the same day as the Speedway's birthday.
Nice. I guess it was meant to be, right?
Yes, it was meant to be. My birthday and the Speedway's birthday are the same day.
Well, Dario Franchitti was born on May the 19th of 1973, and of course, Dario Franchitti is from Scotland, even though Donald Davidson loves to tell the fact that his name is of Italian descent, but his family moved to Scotland where his father actually at one point was in the ice cream business, did a couple of different things. Franchitti talked about in the event that I was in with him that his father at one point had remortgaged their home to be able to sustain Dario's driving career because he saw the promise in both Dario and his brother as racers. And Dario said, if you knew my mother, you would know how not only well convicted he must have been in that belief, but also how secretive he must have been, because my mom never would have gone for that. But nonetheless, it all worked out. Dario Franchitti came to the Indianapolis 500 in 2002. He was a teammate of Paul Tracy's during the controversial finish of that race. I will never forget working at that time in local television and Franchitti getting out of his car, and I was in the pits, and went up to Franchitti with a microphone and said, what did you just see at the end of the race? And he said, what I saw was my teammate winning the Indy 500, referring to Paul Tracy. Of course, we know that Elio Castroneves, not Tracy, would be that who was declared the winner of that race. He would come back in 2004 with Dario Franchitti, and in a familiar theme, a race that was shortened by rain. He would run again in 05 and 06, and then in 2007, Dario Franchitti, in driving for Michael Andretti, even though it was a rainy day, it was a rain-shortened race that was then resumed, then shortened again. And Dario Franchitti, after 166 laps, the skies opened up. Dario, who had a cut tire, had to work his way back up to the front of the field and got there in time. And eventually, Dario Franchitti would be named the winner because he was in front of the field when the rains came, and a deserving one at that. 2017, Dario Franchitti getting his first Indianapolis 500 win. But while absorbing everything that came with that, he also needed a little help with Central Indiana geography. Here's Dario Franchitti.
At that point, so I had John Anderson on my radio, and Ando was, I think he lived in Brownsburg. He had his buddies lived in Brownsburg, and they were having a barbecue or something. And he came on the radio at one point and said to me, the race had been stopped once already, and the rains kept having these caution flags. And he said to me, he's like, okay, mate, the rain's in Brownsburg, and we just got to hold on here. And I'm thinking, where's Brownsburg? So I had to kind of get my geography lesson on Indianapolis. So once we figured out that, then we had another couple of restarts, managed to keep the lead. I think Dixon was second through those restarts. So I was having to hold him off, which is no easy thing. And then we had another yellow, and Ando said something like, I think that was when Marco flipped on the backstretch. And Ando said, look, the rain is literally four blocks away. And then it came, and then it was just, got to get this thing round to the finish line, because it was raining so hard, and the car did not, even at pace car speed, I couldn't keep up with the pace car. So I just wanted to get to that finish line, and that was it.
It was a Canadian Club-sponsored car, and you can bet that was part of the festivity and the celebration that night. A nice beverage to relax and enjoy the first Indianapolis 500-mile race win for Dario Franchitti. And, of course, he was correct. It was not just a rain that was four blocks away. It was a deluge. Mike, I've seen a lot of rainstorms at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and including the one that Buddy Rice had won in just a few years earlier. But, boy, that one that washed out 2007, there wasn't any question about the fact that that was going to be the end of the race.
No, that one definitely was going to end the race. That was quite a gully washer, as they call it. That was a big-time rainstorm.
This is how it sounded 17 years ago when Dario Franchitti won his first Indianapolis 500-mile race.
And here is the checkered flag. So Brian Howard will display the checkered with the yellow next time around. Dario Franchitti will be the winner of the 91st Indianapolis 500-mile race.
And you could hear Mike King of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network and the rain falling behind. So Dario Franchitti is a winner for the first time in his career. And, of course, as we would find out, that would not be the only time. There's a very famous photo of Dario staring at the BorgWarner Trophy and realizing his face was going on the same trophy as his hero, Jim Clark. Mike, the thing that you have to love about Dario Franchitti, amongst many things, is he's one of the true gentlemen to run here, but he has a real appreciation, and in addition to that, anything that he can absorb regarding his countryman Jim Clark, he is ecstatic about.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about Dario, is his love of history, and that's how we actually became friends, is bonding over, his favorite driver is Jim Clark, my favorite driver is Jim Clark, and that's how we actually became friends over that. And I love that particular picture that Dario is about to talk about. It's a really poignant picture. It's Dario the day after, they take the famous day after shots, and Dario's staring at the BorgWarner, and you can see the light has just kind of come on that, hey, my face is going to be on this same trophy that Jim Clark's face is on. And it's just one of those just amazing shots. I rank that shot up there with that shot of Alexander Rossi, that just kind of incredulous look face that he had in victory lane. Like, what just happened to me? What did I just do? Like, it just didn't immediately register for Alexander Rossi that he won, And so it's one of those shots that's not on the track, but it's just, to me, that shot of Dario is just really one of those important photos in Indianapolis 500 lore.
Dario Franchitti on getting his face on the BorgWarner Trophy in 2007.
It was a little bit of a daze, to be honest. I mean, some of that was just the whirlwind nature of winning the 500. Some of it was to do with the fact I'd been out with my Scottish friends till 7 o'clock that morning, and that was sort of I think that picture was taken about 7:45. So, but the realization, I think that was the thing. I'd sort of looked at the trophy before, but never got too close. I was never one for looking at trophies before you sort of won them. And to actually sit and study the faces and to see Jim's, I just caught Jim's likeness on the trophy, and that was the moment they caught. And I've spent a load of time now studying the trophy. In fact, I was fortunate enough that the BorgWarner guys and Steve Shunk brought it round to the house in just outside London here where I live, and it stayed the night, which was pretty cool. So I got to spend a whole lot of time with it, and it is incredible. And that big trophy just, it means the world to me.
And, of course, Jim Clark won the Indianapolis 500-mile race, tragically, 3 years before his passing. He won the race in 1965 and then was fatally injured in 1968. And so as a result of that, Dario Franchitti never met, obviously, Jim Clark, but he has met family members of Jim Clark, and I'm sure they are well aware of his reverence for Clark himself. In 2010, Dario Franchitti, of course, was driving for Chip Ganassi, no longer driving for Michael Andretti in what is still a cordial relationship. But incidentally, when I saw Dario the other day and asked him, he said he was wearing his ring from 2012. We'll get to that. He would become a three-time winner. But that 2010 ring, he said, doesn't fit him anymore. I said, what about the 2007 ring? And he said, actually, Michael never bought me one. I need to get with him on that. So Dario Franchitti has at least two of his three rings. But that 2010 race, reality is this. That is, by that time, not that it wasn't the case before, but Dario Franchitti by 2010, along with his teammate Scott Dixon, were clearly two of the more stout drivers within IndyCar racing. Dan Weldon, his close friend as well. There were a number of them, but the reality, Mike, 2010, Dario was the class of the field.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, Dario, it was kind of really Dario's race to lose that year, 2010. He was the dominant car, and just an outstanding effort from those guys that day. But, I mean, it really was his race to lose because he was definitely the dominant car.
He led six times for 155 laps. And by the end, Dario Franchitti was a two-time winner.
Well, he had slowed down on the previous lap. We'll never know if, in fact, he was going to have enough fuel to complete this one under green, but it doesn't matter. The twin checkers are out. Dario Franchitti is a two-time winner of the Indianapolis 500-mile race.
So Dario Franchitti gets win number two. And once again, Mike, he wins the race under the caution flag.
He won all of his races under the caution flag, which is kind of interesting because he's the only one who's a three-time winner who won all of his races under the caution flag. Dan Weldon won both of his under the caution flag, but Dario's the only three-time winner to win all of his under the caution flag. And Dario's one of those drivers as well who's a multiple-time winner who won all of his races with a different car number. He won with three different car numbers, just like Johnny Rutherford did as well.
Dario Franchitti on his 2010 Indy 500 win.
No, I think it had the biggest advantage, absolutely. I mean, I could pull away just at will in that car. It was so much better for whatever reason. All the cars, you know, had Honda engines. They were all very much spec, but whatever the rubbing the guys had done on it and the setup that Chris Simmons put on it, it was able to just drive away. And then, of course, as always happens at Indy, I think don't get too comfortable. The amount of times I've driven around there thinking don't get too comfortable because something's going to happen, and sure enough, the yellow flag came out like 100 and lap 160-something, I think it was, and all of a sudden you have to make ridiculous fuel mileage to get to the end, which we managed, but only just.
In 2012, Dario Franchitti and his teammate Scott Dixon didn't necessarily have the qualifying effort they were looking for. Franchitti would start the race 16th. Dixon would start the race 15th. But as we know, and we'll see if we find this out again this Sunday, it's not where you qualify per se. It's what you can do through the combination of speed. And as you heard Dario talking about their fuel efficiency as well, in terms of trying to get yourself up towards the front of the race. Dario and Dixon were able to do exactly that. But as exciting as it might have been for Dario Franchitti in 2012 to work his way up front, reality is he almost didn't get that opportunity. Early in the race, an incident on pit lane with EJ Viso. Dario Franchitti on that moment that almost ended his race before it truly began.
Well, we had a problem up here. I haven't seen a replay yet, but as Dario Franchitti was coming in, he got tagged from behind by EJ Viso. I can't declare whose fault it was at this point, but there was contact, and Franchitti spun around, and we were lucky the crew members did not get taken out. I don't believe there are any injuries down here, but it did damage Franchitti's car. They had to change the front nose cone assembly, so he doesn't lose a lap. It happens under yellow, but still, all kinds of track position lost for Franchitti.
We qualified not very well. Honda brought some stonking engines for the race, and Dixon and I were 1 and 2 in carb day. and we thought, we might have something here. You know, moving up the field, got spun in the first pit stop all the way at the back, and Barry Wanzer, who was on my radio every race I did with Ganassi, he said, as I left the pit lane, he's like, don't worry, man, we've got a long race ahead of us, we can do this. And I came on the radio and made some comment, like, what? I said, well, what movie are you watching? You know, you're clearly crazy. And he was right. You know, 30-something laps later, we were back in the lead.
And, of course, towards the end of the race, after Dario had put himself in position, he battles back. He's running up front, and it looked like victory might be his. But I will never forget being in turn two for that race, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes Takuma Sato. By the way, that was Kevin Lee that you heard on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network describing the incident with EJ Viso. At the end of the race, it would be Dario Franchitti trying to get under green, his third Indianapolis 500-mile win, but his first under the green flag. The caution would come out, and it would be because of the hard charge from Takuma Sato trying to pass Dario Franchitti.
Takuma Sato, the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan driver, now pulling up on the leader, Dario Franchitti. Will he make the move? No, he'll crash in turn number one. Jake Query, Sato crashes, trying to make the pass for the lead on the final lap of the race.
Dario Franchitti got through that, and Takuma Sato did not.
And so Dario Franchitti, I think I said something along the lines of, so long as he can keep his hands on the wheel and the fuel holds up, is about to become a three-time winner of the Indianapolis 500, and that is exactly what he became. Mike King was the play-by-play voice that you heard there from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, the chief announcer, of course, and Dario later talked with him about holding off Takuma Sato en route to win number three.
It was no fun at all. It was absolutely zero fun at all. At the time, I was thinking, okay, here he comes. And you know, the natural instinct is to throw the block, but I know if I throw the block, I'm getting disqualified. So I kind of I moved down as much as I could. I wasn't going to give him any more than I had to. And I clearly remember turning in, thinking this thing's either going to stick, or I'm going to hit the wall, and I'm not lifting, whatever happens. And it just kept sticking. And my spotter, Scott Horner's voice was getting higher and higher because Sato was getting closer and closer. And then he eventually, when he got backwards, he hit. They had those bumper pods on behind the rear wheels, and we hit bumper pod to bumper pod. And I was able to gather it up, and that was it. But it was, that was a crazy one. That was an absolute crazy race. And to finish 1-2-3 with Scott and Tony on that day especially was really special.
When you have a guy behind you whose motto is no attack, no chance, you know he's going to stick it in there, right?
Oh, I knew he was going to try because he'd been doing these sort of half passes all day. And we got on great now. Yeah, we've obviously had some history with the Houston accident and all that sort of stuff. We got on great. But at the time he came up and he was having a bit of a discussion with me after the race, several hours after the race, and so I've invited him to leave. I believe, I'm not going to use exact words, but I basically said, look, man, you're ruining my buzz. You need to leave.
that victory lane ceremony was really special, though, because, I remember you looking to the sky and thinking about Dan and how special that was when you got the milk. Because one of the things I think is so cool about the BorgWarner is, you know, obviously you guys are, you know, immortalized. Your faces are immortalized forever, and you're surrounding Dan. You know, and so that's one of the things I think is the coolest thing about it is you're the 2010 winner, you're the 2012 winner, and in between is your buddy Dan, and you got Tony next to you. So, I mean, you can't do really any better than that.
Nope, still keeping an eye on Dan all these years later. I met him when he was 6 years old, and he was trouble then, and he was trouble in the Andretti years. We were like his big brothers. And then he settled down and he became this sort of zen-like person and this, you know, this amazing father, and it was the most amazing transformation, and it was wonderful to watch. But I am so proud to be on the trophy next to him, and you know, TK's right there, as you say, and to be on there with a lot of my heroes, it's cool.
And by the way, that was obviously Mike Thompson doing the interview as opposed to my Freudian slip of Mike King, the aforementioned Mike on the program. My apologies, but fun memories nonetheless for Dario Franchitti in 2012. It is a birthday edition of Beyond the Bricks, and speaking of birthdays, there's a winner from the 50s that will be blowing out candles today. We'll let you know who that is. We'll let you hear him winning the Indianapolis 500 amongst other sound clips when we return to Beyond the Brick.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Life can be pretty busy, but when you become a Kroger Boost member, it's like getting a savings superpower. With unlimited free delivery, you'll save time and money, up to $650 to be exact. You'll keep saving with exclusive member offers and 2x fuel points every time you shop. Sign up for a 30-day free trial of Boost from Kroger to unlock your savings superpower today. No cape required. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Guys, come on. What kind of ideas we have for our fan club members?
How about a day with Dario?
Just say it. Come on, just say it.
I'm not even Irish. I'm from Scotland.
Come on.
They're magically delicious.
With Indy Downforce, you get great gear, trips, offers, maybe even meet your favorite driver. Join at IndyCar.com today.
Dario Franchitti. Happy birthday to him yesterday. He shares a week's worth of birthdays, if you will, with some of the greats in the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Bob Swikert. This is his birthday today. Happy birthday to Bob. He, of course, came to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in 1952. Started 32nd in his first race, would finish 26th. By 1955, though, he would be a race winner in a race where he started in the 14th position. Bob Swikert in 1955 would take the checkered flag.
And here he comes, driving beautifully right into that groove, coming right down in front of us right now, down the chute. And into the southeast turn, he takes the southeast turn very nicely, riding the same groove he's ridden for the last 50 miles. Now, Jack Shapiro, you should be able to see him.
I sure can, Bill. Here comes Bobby Swikert, the hometown kid from Speedway City, driving Jack Zink's car out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Jack Zink is a good friend of mine. I know Jack Zink Jr. is really going to be a happy boy. He's going into the northeast turn. He's on his way in there, and I think in a moment, Jim Shelton will catch sight of him.
All right, Jack Shapiro, we certainly can see him. A good-looking car and a good-looking driver. And he's headed for the home stretch. This man has really driven a race. Cool, calm, and collected, and that goes for both driver and automobile. You can hear the cheers in the home stretch, and here's Sid Collins. Pick him up.
We can't see him yet, but here he comes down, I'm sure. That beautiful pink car, the checkered flag is out. Bill Vandewater, the starter, holds it high, waves it, and there's Bob Swikert, the winner of the Brookline Manual 500-mile race. The greatest thrills in sports, the start and the finish of the 500-mile race. Bob Swikert, who started 14th, moved up to the pack, held the lead most of the day, and is the winner.
And, of course, Bob Swikert's win, Bob Swikert, who would be 98 years old today, as a matter of fact, his win was clouded a bit, admittedly, in the moment by the fact that he was still unaware of what many people had known, and that was that a quarter of the way, or just a little over that, of that race was when Bill Vukovich had been fatally injured in his lap 56 accident. Bob Swikert in victory lane was well aware of the accident and concerned for his fellow driver and friend.
Now to victory lane and Charlie Brockman.
And down at victory lane, it's a scene of jubilation as Bob Swikert is being congratulated by his pit crew and they're yelling and screaming, and Jack Zink, one of the car owners, and Bob has just been kissed by his wife, Doris. Dinah Shore is moving in. Dinah Shore is moving in now, and she is going to kiss, but Dinah Shore kisses Bob Swikert, and he's got lipstick all over Bob's face. He can't hear a thing for a minute, so we'll wait until he has a chance to get his wits about him. He's going to get now a drink from the cup. He's deafened by the roar of the engine for 200 laps. He's getting his senses now. And Bob, can you hear us now, boy? Can you hear us coming in?
Got hurt.
Bob, how did you feel about this?
Who got hurt?
Bob Swikert now is being congratulated by his wife, and he has the BorgWarner trophy on the back of the car, and Bob has a drink now from the Wilbur water as he's getting a drink now of ice water. Recovering just a little bit. And now, Bob, we want to get a few words with you. How do you feel about this win?
Oh, wonderful. All the time you worry about the machine staying together. This is the first race I've ever finished here. I was just asking who got hurt of my Johnny Boyd. I saw his car upside down on the backstretch, and I was real worried about him.
Johnny's all right, Bob. And, Bob, along about 150 laps, you were pointing violently at the rear end of your car. Was there any trouble, major difficulties then?
No, I just wanted to know how many seconds the guy was behind me.
Oh, I see. Well, at that point, he was running about 30 seconds, and then those cars went into the pits, and you had a lap and a half, so you knew you had it pretty well conquered at the end.
Yeah, but I'd flipped over on reserve, on my reserve fuel tank, and we were still sweating it out.
Well, you didn't have much fuel left.
Not much.
Well, Bob, congratulations to you.
Thank you, Charlie.
On a very fine drive here today. Well, we have a few words from Bob Swikert. It is mass mayhem down here as Dinah Shore now is getting in to get a picture with the winner, Bob Swikert. And Mr. Raymond Firestone is up here. Bob says, watch the exhaust pipe. And Dinah now is congratulating Bob Swikert, kisses him again.
One of the things I've always been interested about that clip is, you know, Bob Swikert asking, you know, who got hurt. He was very concerned about it, and they didn't want to tell him that Bill Vukovich had been fatally injured. But I will also say that, Jake, in listening to a lot of these Victory Lane interviews as I've been listening lately, there was nobody more interested in the kissing part of the Victory Lane ceremony than Charlie Brockman. And, I mean, he was doing play-by-play of every single one of these kisses. And I mean, there was nobody more interested in the Victory Lane kiss portion of the ceremonies than Charlie Brockman.
Theater of the mind, Mike. Theater of the mind, right?
That's right.
Got to let everybody know what's going on. You know, Swikert would change teams. By the way, a little bit of a picky, if you will, nitpick when he said he had never finished a race running at Indianapolis or finished in completion. The year before, he was running at the end of the race, but Swikert only completed 197 laps, so he had not actually done the 500 miles. He is correct in that. He would change teams in 1956, and just a few weeks prior to the race, he sat down with Tom Carnegie for what we've heard a lot of these on Beyond the Bricks, the taped radio interviews that would be sent out as kind of a press junket, if you will, to radio stations to get them interested in the Indianapolis 500-mile race. The 1956 race would turn out to be Swikert's last. More on that in a moment. He would start 10th, I should say, and finished 6th. Bob Swikert, 1956, with Tom Carnegie.
This is Tom Carnegie reporting from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, home of the International Speed Classic, the famed 500-mile race, presenting the 500-mile winner of 1955, Bob Swikert, and out to repeat again for the second year in a row. Bob, it's nice to have you at the track again this year.
Well, thank you, Tom.
How long did it take you to realize your ambition to win the 500?
Well, Tom, after I once got here in 1950, it took me 6 years, although my first time in competition was 1952. But this also being my first time to win, it was my first time to finish the race. I had gone out with mechanical failures of one kind or another 3 years prior.
What have you been doing since winning the event last year? I imagine, first of all, you've been eating regular.
Yeah, that's true. Put my kids back on milk.
Well, you were the national driving champ of 1955, among your other honors. Tell us about the races you were in. How many you won?
Well, Tom, I only won one national championship race and got 3 seconds. I was leading a couple of them and had the misfortune to fall out late in the race. I won the Midwestern Sprint championship also.
I understand you were in Sebring, Florida, too.
Yes, I was just going to say about the most fun I had all winter was driving the sports car. It was my first experience, and although it isn't the split-second hard kind of racing that we do, it's very interesting and a lot of fun because you're doing a lot of shifting, you know, and braking, and it's a lot of fun.
Has it made a big difference in your personal life, Bob, winning the race?
Well, not so much. The only thing is I don't have any time to myself anymore.
That's what I wondered, if the family was objecting now. Tell us about your family, Bob.
Well, I have a little girl, 2.5 years old, and then, my wife, I have 2 stepchildren also. They mm-hmm. had last year, you know, that I had 3 children, but really only one of them is mine.
Well, now, how does your new car this year compare with your winning car of a year ago?
Well, the car is considerably lighter, and it's just a little bit narrower. And it has a more rigid frame, and although it has the same Myron Drake engine, and basically it's the same automobile. It's just beefed up in spots and lightened in others and narrowed up a little bit.
What number will it carry, Bob?
Carry
and what's the name of it?
Number 1.
And what's the name of it?
It's the DA Lubricant Special.
And by virtue of carrying number 1, that means that you were the number 1 driver in the nation in 1955, right, Bob?
Yes, that's right.
And that's quite an honor, and that's the first time you've had the privilege of carrying that number. It means a lot, right?
Yes, that's right.
Say, what will be the fastest qualifying speed this year, Bob? You ought to be able to make a prediction.
Well, I have. I don't say that a fellow will average this speed, but I think that someone will turn a lap 146 miles an hour, maybe just one lap.
Would you like to be the fellow that does it?
Yes, I would. I'd like to sit on the pole, although I think the main thing is to get in the race. You know, I mean, if you don't get in, you can't win it.
How far back did you start in last year's field of 33?
I started 14th.
And you came up and won the event, so that proves you don't have to be in that front row.
I was third at 20 laps and then was never further back than third.
Say, the total prize fund for being the fastest qualifier this year is $2,500. So you're going to shoot for it, and that'll be some more of that money that you've picked up over the last few months.
Well,
right?
We'll give it a whirl if we're ready to go on the first day. The car isn't quite completed, although we expect to have it ready by the end of the week.
Thank you very much, Bob Swigert. Time trials, 19th and 20th at the 500-mile race. And then again the following weekend, the 26th and 27th. The 500-mile classic itself is set for May the 30th. Indianapolis has the welcome sign out for you. Be in Hoosier Land on Memorial Day.
Sadly, less than 3 weeks after the Indianapolis 500 of 1956, Bob Swigert was fatally injured in a racing accident in Salem, Indiana. He, of course, as you could hear there, was a very likable, one would seem, driver and personality. And Donald Davidson says it's kind of a shame that more people didn't give him his acclaim for his immense talent. Here is Donald Davidson, the historian emeritus of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, on the legacy of Bob Swigert.
It is a shame that he is so overlooked because he ran hard. He was probably born a little early. If it had been a little bit later, you know, when we'd had TV and all this kind of thing, Swigert, I think, would have been a superstar.
Speaking of superstars, speaking of birthdays, and speaking of those who run hard, there is one celebrating a birthday today that ran as hard as anybody at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and still runs for speed today. We'll let you know who it is when we return to Beyond the Bricks.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
There once was a magic... Sorry! At Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, we don't do fairy tales.
We do real, like real adventures to Mars or real journeys into the future to see how imagination can really take us to strange new worlds, and real trips into the past where we meet heroes and legends way ahead of their time. Real rockets, real astronauts, real adventure, all at Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. Discover something real.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
What can you learn from Tony Stewart?
You gotta sell stuff you love. People have to trust you. You are what you endorse.
So any questions?
Why is nobody buying my Estrada glasses? Hello? Estrada.
Look at me, I got a million of these care crushers on loan. Nothing. How do you do it, Tony?
Look, endorse things you believe in, like me and the Whopper. I endorse it because I love it.
Okay, you lost me on that one, Tony.
Estrada.
Whopper, flame, fresh taste, endorsed and loved by Tony Stewart.
You know, that's actually an endorsement that's pretty easy to buy into, to be honest with you. Tony Stewart, by the way. Yeah, he probably loves Burger King. Love Dairy Queen as well, because the Dairy Queen in Columbus, Indiana, sponsored a lot of his early racing days. He would win a race. He would go in. He would get some ice cream from the Dairy Queen in Columbus. Tony Stewart essentially needs no introduction or explanation to Central Indiana race fans. But by 1996, he would find his way into the Indianapolis 500 in the Indy Racing League. And he was fast, no question about it. It was an unfortunate circumstance that would have him leading the field to green in 1996 with the tragic passing and practice of Scott Brayton, who had organically won the pole. But that ascended Tony Stewart to starting up front. He talked before the race with Mike King, the chief announcer of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, Bob Jenkins, who of course preceded Jenkins or Mike King in that role earlier, would also be heard in this particular clip. Tony Stewart in 1996.
Well, the responsibility of pacing the field to the green flag rests on the shoulders of a 25-year-old rookie from Rushville, Indiana, Tony Stewart. He won three open-wheel championships within the United States Auto Club in 1995, Midget Sprints and Silver Crown. He has led both previous Indy Racing League events at Orlando and Phoenix and now seeks to become the first rookie winner of the 500 since 1966 when Graham Hill took the checkered flag. One of our pit reporters for the day, Mike King, is with Tony Stewart.
Good morning, Bob, and certainly Tony Stewart has run hundreds, if not thousands, of races during his life. At age 7, he began racing go-karts, and now, 18 years later, it is the biggest day of your life, quite literally. Can you put into words for us what's going through your head right now?
Well, I mean, I'm just ready to go race, and, you know, this is what I've worked for 17 years, and, you know, it's been a long month. To ride, you know, two or three different times already this month. So, you know, today's what I'm used to. I'm used to just getting in the car and going racing. So, you know, finally the long wait's over, and here within an hour or so we'll get started.
As a pole sitter, obviously a huge responsibility on your shoulders to bring this field to the green flag. Have you talked with any of the other drivers? I know Roberto Guerrero obviously has done it before, Ari Leyendijk. Have you had an opportunity, or are you just confident with your abilities from your past racing experience?
Well, USAC has has a front row drivers meeting for the three drivers on the front row, and that's nice because the three of us get to talk about what we think is going to happen and what we want to do. And you know, we've already discussed that you know, if somebody has a nose in the other guy, we're going to let them go and make sure that we get through this thing safely. So we just take our time, and you know, I'm pretty confident. I ran 106 races last year, and I had to start 106 races. So you know, it's just another start. I mean, you have to treat it like it's just another race when you start this thing. So you know, I'm just going to try to use a little common sense and just be careful with it.
A true racer indeed. Last night you spent the evening at Indianapolis Raceway Park watching the midgets, and tell us how your evening went after that. How'd you sleep?
Well, I had a little bit of a headache when I went home. Took four Advil, laid down. 11 o'clock I was passed down, didn't wake up, didn't stir, didn't move till the alarm went off this morning at 6 o'clock. So I slept very well.
We wish you the best of luck out there, and have a good, clean, safe race.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
That's Tony Stewart. He's on the pole, 25 years old, from Rushville, Indiana, and this is his big day. Bob?
Mike King, obviously a pit reporter at that time. In 1996, Stewart led the first 31 laps of the race, and engine failure would finish him in 24th. All told, in his five races, three top tens at the Indianapolis 500-mile race. And as well as that, of course, obviously somebody who won in a much heavier car. Tony Stewart, the 2005 Brickyard 400 champion.
He sweeps out of turn four and sees the white flag at the same track where his hero A.J. Foyt won before him. Now Tony Stewart is 2.5 miles away from history.
Looking in his mirror every about 2 seconds right now.
Turn two at the Brickyard. Down the backstretch.
This is going to be really, really big for him.
Half a lap to go. The fans cheering.
That's how it would sound as Tony Stewart would do exactly what we're doing right now. Take it right to the wire and get the win, because we're out of time. But he did win that race. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Bricks.